Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, cats and dogs, everybody out there listening. Woke Bros is back. I'm Michael Brooks. I guess I'm back too. I'm with my compadres, dear friends, Big Waz, Wazney Lombre, the Haitian sensation, and Nando Enrique Vila. Just laying it on. Of course, the producer, the great producer, Rob Lopez, he's steering the ship. We've got a whole lot to get to you in just a minute. But first, let's talk live shows. We're over halfway sold out for the April 3rd TMBS in Austin, Texas at the North Door with Abby Martin, Anna Kasparian. That's going to be a killer show. Patrons of the Michael Brooks Show, which you should become one, are getting an email, have already gotten an email to get the pre-sales for our next live show, which is going to be June in Boston. I'm going to try to convince Waz to come to that one. Waz, what are the live shows we got?
Hey, maybe the Boston Celtics will be in the NBA Finals in June, and I'll be there anyway, so you never know. So, of course, March 28th at
the Bell celebrate the great Boston sports tradition, Waz.
There you go. That and busing. On March 28th at the Bell House in Brooklyn, you guys have been to the Michael Brooks live show there. You've been to Count the Dings live there. You know what type of quality venue that is. Amazing staff, amazing atmosphere right there in downtown Brooklyn, New York. Make sure you get your tickets at countthedings.com. It's the entire Count the Dings crew, plus Jerry Ferrara, plus, you know, a few surprise guys in the media. You'd be surprised who we're going to get up there, man. Make sure you get your tickets. Tickets are moving faster as we get closer to the date. You don't want to be left outside for this one, so make sure you get your tickets to that.
Awesome. All right. So, gentlemen, and we promise everybody, you know, we're gonna get back to a little bit of the sports and the movies and the culture and so on. But at the same time, this is the most important election in our lifetimes. Yeah. I have to think that. I mean, I get 2008, very important. And every election is important, but this is a big one. So we're going to start just basically big picture. There was a debate last night. There's a South Carolina primary on Friday. Bernard Sanders is the clear front runner after demolishing the competition in Nevada. in a thoroughly satisfying way. He was the target. Gentlemen, Waz, go first. Nando, go first. You guys pick. How did you think that debate went? And then I'll come back and give my thoughts.
Go ahead, Nando.
I mean, it was a absolutely mind-numbing debate. I mean, after the previous debate in Nevada, which I thought was a lot of fun and very lively and, you know, genuinely cathartic in many ways, this one was just awful. The moderators were just absolutely dog shit. Everyone, including Elizabeth Warren, went after Bernie right out the gate. It was no good. I really did not enjoy that at all. I just saw Mayor Pete just be the most cynical person of all time. The crowd was awful because it turns out that you needed to give like an $1,800 minimum dollar donation to the DNC to get into the crowd. So they were all cheering everything that came out of Mike Bloomberg's mouth and booing everything that came out of Bernie's mouth. I really did not enjoy that at all.
Yeah, the moderators kind of got their doors blown off there. And you know, similar, and funny enough, similar to the way the rest of the candidates did on Saturday in Nevada. I think everybody, including, you know, we're going to get to the freakouts on cable TV where, like, you know, this is like when France just was occupied by Germany and, you know, the one lady on CNN basically sounded like she was announcing the death of her puppy when she said that Sanders had won, and she did the, he's gone, guys. You know, like she did the whole performative sigh, like something painful and terrible had happened to her. I think the moderators just were kind of, they were out on their skis, man. They didn't know what to expect. And it's stupid because the victories have been so decisive in the last three primaries. I don't understand how they didn't know that everybody was going to be charged up and ready to come at Bernie. And I just wish they were a lot more well prepared with rebuttals for some of these candidates, whether it be a Bloomberg, whether it be a Biden. Like when these guys just spout off stuff that just straight up isn't true. I wish they were a little bit better prepared. But again, we all knew what was going to happen going in. Of course, some of the timing stuff matters so much, right, guys? Where Bloomberg comes in, everybody understands that he's just spreading money everywhere. He's rising in the polls from seemingly being in the freaking race for 2 weeks, which says a lot about our system, that a guy that has actually no Democratic support, meaning like people, democracy support, but yet can just buy his way into a debate, possibly purchase a nomination. I think everybody rightfully was like, hold on now, and went at him because of the timing. Even at that time, I think Bernie's more of a front runner now than he was. But it's not like he wasn't, you know, the most formidable person in the field. And they didn't go after Bernie's. But the timing happened to where in Nevada they got, you know, their doors blown off. And they're like, all right, everybody's like, all right, let's go beat up on this guy. And I think that's what you saw. But I told you guys last week, I don't think these debates go for or against Bernie in any discernible direction because he has been like literally 30 years saying the same thing, saying the same thing. We need to rein in the money. We need to help out working people in not so many ways, but the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. So I don't think, you know, these people thought that they could take a bite out of Bernie. It just didn't happen for them, I don't think.
Yeah, the top line, I think, is true. And, you know, after the debate, and I'm really at a point where I'm trying. Like, I even tried for a couple of days to be like, you know, can I analyze Buttigieg as an example in any way objectively? Because I just hate him. Like, I really, really find him so viscerally unlikable. And then I was like, you know what? And I tried to start to think about, like, you know what? Obviously, the bullshit he pulled in Iowa, of course, I'm going to hate it because I'm a believer in democracy and I support Bernie Sanders. But I was like, you know what? Maybe if I didn't have that preset where I cared about the popular vote and who got the most votes and I supported Bernie, maybe I would think like, wow, look at this like young dude, you know, having the balls to just like claim victory. Or, you know, I was really trying. And watching him in that debate just interrupt and interrupt and interrupt and interrupt and interrupt, I was sitting there. I was like, and I said this on the Majority Report because we were covering it. I was like, do you think that this is cracking through? Because it just seems to me like, and not to mention like that horrifying videos going around of him just doing these bizarre, like, single white female impersonations of Barack Obama. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's fucking disturbing. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what? I understand that all of us Bernie bros always hated this guy because he's phony and corporate and soulless, but this has to be coming through a little bit, right? And at the same time, I watched and no, nobody laid a glove on Bernie. He's strong. He stays there. He doesn't take bullshit. But I also was like, yeah, I think Bernie's in the beginning of the race, he's definitely had worse debates. And I think his last couple of debates were better than that debate. However, the exit polls coming out of the debate where everybody's against him, they're, you know, Warren's lying about his record, Bloomberg's calling him a communist, Pete's interrupting literally everything he says, you know, when Biden has like an ability to string sentences together, he's going at him, and Klobuchar's waiting in the wings to be like, hey, don't forget, we can't have shit. And the moderators are biased against him and the Cuba and all of this bullshit. And they go and they do snap polls and normal people are like, yeah, I think Bernie did the best. Yeah, I think he has the strongest case against Trump. So it's like, all right, shit, it was a terrible debate. It was an embarrassment, but he just steamrolled through. And the last thing I'll say, Chris Christie, I just saw a clip. Chris Christie, of all people, got it. He's like, and, you know, Christie is being kind of full of shit, but in a way, comedically, he's right. He's just like, yeah, he's like, number one, Bernie's the only one up there talking about ideas. And two, everybody's like, hey, you're a communist who loves Castro. And he's like, okay, fine, that's true. Now let's talk about healthcare. And he's like, because he doesn't care. Yeah. And that's how you win.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine after the debate, and it's really remarkable how similar the dynamic of this race is to 2016 in the Republican primary. And one of the things that made Trump so formidable compared to, you know, all the other fucking losers up there, like the Marco Rubios and John Kasichs of the world, is that Trump is fundamentally a person who is true to himself. Like, this is something that the fact checkers like could never understand, that he lies all the time, but in a way that is true to himself, right? He's not, he's not a cynic, you know? And so like when in the race in 2016, when, you know, the fact checkers would like tally up all his lies and whatever, and that's fine. But like when Hillary Clinton would say something like, I'm going to put working families first. Like, you can't call that a lie in the strict fact-checking sense, but everyone watching her say that like knows it's a giant lie and that she's not being true to herself. So when you attack Trump for all this kind of stuff and he just kind of remains true to himself in the face of those attacks, it becomes a very formidable thing. And I think that's kind of what's happening with Bernie. You know, like, Pete Buttigieg's attacks on Bernie are like unbelievably cynical, right? They're hollow and filled with lies. And the same thing with Warren's attacks on Bernie. Like, you know, she in her heart of hearts, like, I'm sure cannot sleep well at night because she knows that she's being cynical and dishonest. And I think at the end of the day, that kind of stuff really shines through with voters. You know, that if someone is just kind of like remaining true to themselves and they're like, you praised Castro. Isn't that horrible? He's like, yeah, whatever. Who cares? I did. Deal with it. Let's talk, like you said, let's talk about healthcare. You know, like, even if someone is like,
real quick, not in the debate, but at the CNN town hall where Chris Cuomo's again with the Castro business, and Bernie did his pivot. He did the criticisms of Cuba. And then he was just like, and he brought literacy, and that's a good thing. And those are the facts. Done. And he called it Cuber, like an old Brooks Jew.
It's so good.
Cuber. He was teaching people to read in the countryside in Cuba. Cuber. That's good.
That is so good.
And it is good, you fucking idiot.
And the other thing that matters too, which is the double-edged sword of attacking the quote-unquote front runner, you kind of you're acknowledging that you're losing. Like, yeah. By doing that, by
that's
going,
true.
By all of you guys doing that, you're acknowledging to the world, like, we're losing this and he's kicking our asses and that's why we got to do it. And therefore, you elevate the guy's status by just straight up just acknowledging, like, no, he's killing us. He's killing us right now and there's nothing we can do, even though all you ever hear on your cable TV audience is that this guy can't win. But guess what? That's not true. That's why we're going after him, because he's killing us. I think that's my favorite part about the attacks. It's a tacit acknowledgement that they are getting outfoxed, outworked, outplanned at every single turn. And it's just amazing, man. And if you're a Bernie supporter, you got to love it.
Yeah, and he's just one of his big political superpowers is just to be able to withstand those attacks and punch back. You know, look at how fragile Bloomberg was in the face of attacks. Like, did he not understand that people were going to bring up all the sexual harassment cases against him? And just the way he reacts is like annoyed and like he scoffs at even the suggestion of it. He has no ability to like make a counter argument or punch back. He just says,
well, you
like,
know, because what's amazing about that is because he doesn't have either like, and I'm just talking like. This really shows like he can literally buy anything. I mean, he can end our democracy through his campaign, but he cannot buy somebody to coach him out of his arrogance to the point where they could just say like, dude, here are two paths. One is you know, not convincingly, because who's really going to believe him, but you get pissed off. You say, hey, look, this is bullshit. Nobody's perfect, but like, please, like I'm a, you know, whatever, like, go at it aggressively, deny it, be indignant and not arrogant. Or you say, hey, grown up a lot in my life. Sorry. Boom. Here's what we got to do moving forward. You know, the fact that he's like when he said, oh, it was just a joke. Somebody didn't. You could feel even outside of the room. And that isn't in the last debate. That was in the Nevada debate. I was in fucking Latin America and I watched that and I was like, you could feel the whole room sink.
Yeah.
Just like the arrogance. And he's not, you know, he's not ready. I will say Bloomberg debating has probably been the only part of this campaign that I will give like all of this dumb like West Wing shit that is almost always untrue a little bit of credit. Like, you know what? I guess in this case, sunlight, it, like just have him debate. Like, because that is what's going to, like, his numbers are plunging.
They're collapsing.
Because you just got him up there. And he's not, you know, he's not a mad genius like Trump. And what he is actually just this very nasty old man who looks at people like ants. And he doesn't have it.
And I keep explaining this to non-New York City people. I'm like, look. Those folks in Staten Island, certain people in Queens and in Brooklyn, places like Bensonhurst, they would have Giuliani back as mayor in a second.
In a second.
They would be like, hell yes, our boy Rudy is back. And, you know, there's certain corners of New York that still has love for de Blasio, even though, you know, he came in with this soaring wave of enthusiasm amongst progressives in New York and obviously never lived up to that. But people still got love for de Blasio. When I tell you nobody cares about Bloomberg in New York City, and he was mayor for 12 years. Nobody wants him back. He has no constituency in the place where he was mayor for 12 years. So the idea that he's going to run some national game, you have no support anywhere. Like, at least Rudy Giuliani, he knows he got some core support amongst a certain type of New Yorker. And we know that, and we know who those people are, right? You know, and you can say the same thing about different people, but like, my goodness, Bloomberg is nobody. Nobody wants him. Nobody liked him. Nobody misses him. So, you know, the idea that he would get up on that stage and just turn into, you know, Jed Bartlett, it is, that just, that don't even make no sense to me, you know?
Well, he's the distillation of the elite, like the plutocracy, its media enablers. And on one hand, I mean, look, and I'm not this is one where you, I think you actually have to be pretty like puritanical about it. If you're taking Bloomberg money and you're endorsing him, not as like a low paid organizer who's right, going to vote for Bernie anyways, that's cool. Go for it. More power to you. Take as much of the old like bastard's
people who
money.
Wield actual influence. But
I'm,
just
look,
like,
I'm saying, you know, well, let me give a specific name. She hasn't even endorsed him. But Stacey Abrams took $5 million from Mike Bloomberg. She did a forum with him, and she went on The View and said his money wasn't a problem. Fuck her. That's it. I'm done. And you know that I'm really – I actually take great pains to actually kind of not have that attitude. I really do think in general people are so quick now in every area to be black or white or cancel people or not see some complexity, which I think is actually really necessary and important. But this is one I'm going to be really hard on. I mean, this is – it's the most raw and basic like rot imaginable. And people who have – you know, especially people who have actual credibility that they will sell out to Mike Bloomberg, nope.
Well, think about what it was in the debate last night in the first ad break, which is the most watched one. The first ad was a Mike Bloomberg ad, like literally purchasing ad space in the airtime of the debate. Like, you know, you see the debate, you see them all fighting, and then all of a sudden you see this like very slickly produced ad with patriotic music showing Mike Bloomberg surrounded by black people and talking about how awesome he is. You know, like it's just so like if this happened in North Korea, we'd be like making fun of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous and it's unconscionable. And like you said, like it, I gotta say, like after our last episode, I felt a little bit better because I was in a dark, dark place with this like Bloomberg juggernaut. Like I was just, I was just seeing him buy up. Like I'm just seeing like Joy Reid just going like, you know what? Maybe we should get Bloomberg. He's a Republican. That's good. That's how we're gonna beat the Republican. I'm like, oh my god, how much is he paying you? How many other people does he have in his pocket? You know, like it's just. But after you said like, yeah, at the end of the day. Nobody likes this dude, and seeing him in the debate just fall flat on his face, and then immediately after his polling numbers just absolutely flatline, and then start going down. It made me feel really good because he really can buy every single important person that he needs to sort of drum up this fake support.
No, because I wanted to bring up something too, because I was reading Charlie Pierce 2 days ago, and he was like, "Look." All of these people, all of the hand-wringing on MSNBC with the pundits, all of the establishment Dems who are acting like this is the end of the world, blah, 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 blah. First of all, the party, like dummies, backed Joe Biden. His late, sloppy-ass campaign, they backed it. The lack of imagination that it took to back a Joe Biden candidacy, again, it can't be overstated. This guy ran twice already before this. Flamed out in disaster, and they backed him as an older, fading man. The like the lack of imagination and hubris and just ridiculousness of the party establishment is dumb, right? I remember back in 2016, me and Mike were talking about it, and it was like, look, in the same country, Hillary Clinton would just be the Republican nominee. She'd be the business-friendly, sensible on social issues, probably don't really care about working people all that much, you know, doesn't want to, you know, hang homosexuals and black people in the streets or whatever. She would be the Republican candidate, and Bernie would represent the working people.
Can I just say that I would pay good money to watch Hillary Clinton do a speech where she's just like, take care of interest rates and don't hang black people.
I mean, when I tell my friends in Spain that the leader of the left party in the United States in 2016 was on the board of Walmart, and her husband, when he was president, named as the Secretary of Treasury the chairman of Goldman Sachs, they're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's the left
again,
party?
In a sensible like, country, that's what would be happening if our politics actually made sense. If the Democratic Party actually made sense, the establishment would have just got behind Warren. And they would have had their establishment-friendly candidate, and they would have had, you know, they could have been like, look, she's progressive. But, like, this is the person who's not afraid to say, I'm a proud capitalist. She's worked for multi-billion-dollar corporations before. They could have had their candidate. But no, they didn't want to do that.
I think it's very clear that like the chips fell perfectly for Bernie in that you're right that in retrospect, the sensible choice for the establishment would have been to just go hard on Warren from the beginning. But I think the fact that Obama world kind of hates Warren because she was because of all the stuff that happened behind the scenes there kind of gave them pause and didn't allow it. And it's kind of the same thing that in the reverse happened with Joe Biden, where no one really believed that Joe Biden had what it takes. No one really wanted Joe Biden. But the fact that he was Obama's VP, everyone felt like they couldn't go after him too hard in the beginning. So it actually kind of lined up perfectly because there was no one to really take that mantle up early on the way Hillary Clinton did in 2016.
Just the idea that the money and the influence in the party would have lined up behind Joe Biden, like that just never made any sense. And I remember telling Mike, and I hate to do this, I told you, so it's just like, yo, he's not good at campaigning. He is so bad at this. Day after day, all he's doing is just messing up. Like
can we talk about the South Africa thing, please?
Oh, my goodness. Can I just freedom fighter in South Africa got locked up?
Let me just say real quick, just to tie that knot, Democrats are so stupid that, look, I still maintain this. Joe Biden in 2016, had he run, would be the president of the United States right now.
Absolutely.
With flaws. So if they still – like they can't even get the timing right. Like if they just could even have an ounce of chutzpah to say, you know what, Hillary? We saw how 2008 went. You were Secretary of State. We're going to just wheel out old Joe. People kind of like him. He's going to know how to deal with the Republicans. Like that would have been true in 2016. Okay, real quick too, just indulge me for 10 seconds. I don't really have this down yet. But I finally have a little bit of a Warren impression.
Okay.
So I just want to protest it. Yeah. You know, she's always talking about her dad.
Yeah.
And so
her janitor dad, right?
Janitor. Yes. And she's always like talking about how down in his luck her dad was, and always looking for reasons to like wage bullshit attacks at Bernie. So she's like, you know, we're going to get to a debate point where she's just like, you know, here's the thing. Daddy said Jews talk too loud to be president.
That's actually pretty good. I get what you're doing.
Should Jews be able to talk loud? Of course they can talk loud. But that does not mean that they're going to be president.
Oh my lord. Goodness gracious.
My favorite thing about Warren is that there was this article that came out in The Nation this week talking about how she was the most intersectional candidate like in the history of mankind, which is the biggest joke. And then no one knows what that means, obviously. And then the moderators ask her a direct question about Israel in the debate. And she's like, oh, well, you know, Israel's got a right to defend themselves. And I don't know what we should do. I hope they work something out. You know, like I hope they just stop doing all that bad stuff.
Intersectionality. You know, like, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly what intersectionality is. It's just
also not to be a little fucking intersectional. No, not intersectional. Fuck intersectional. But to be a little historical, and plenty of people. I didn't read that article, but plenty of people pointed out. Like, do you really want to go on that angle when you know that Shirley Chisholm ran for president in 1972? Like, do you really want to lean on that angle? Like, really? I mean, the arrogance and the entitlement of the Warren campaign is actually fucking awe-inspiring. Like, I see people literally whining on Twitter that Bernie's going to campaign in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
I mean, liberals are out of their fucking mind.
Wait, what?
They're saying it's a mean thing to do to Warren.
Yeah,
make her lose by more in her home state than she's already going to lose by. But yeah, I mean, liberals just have this weird way of looking politics in which they view it all through their own personal experience. I'm not even talking about their own personal self-interest, which is how the vast majority of people all over the world look at politics. But like liberals look at politics by projecting their own experience onto the experience of the person who they like. So like if you've ever gotten, you know, overlooked in a meeting, or someone has like taken your idea at work and gotten credit for it, you know, like they see that happening with Warren, and then like that only makes them support her more. Right. And it's just like you're projecting your own frustrations in your day to day life onto a politician. And that's just like a weird thing to do. Like, I don't know, like Bernie has nothing to do with my life. Like, his experience couldn't be more different than my life experience.
You don't sit around and write like 50 like tweet threads about how, like, you know, if Bernie was doing my taxes, okay, Here's what he would do. Calm me down immediately. And he would really make me feel soothed. And I mean, and by the way, like that, I'm not making this up. That's like a literal thing that somebody wrote. So yeah, it's wild. But anyways, what did Joe Biden? I mean, look, to be fair to him, if he got arrested ending the apartheid regime, maybe we got to give him a second look, right?
Of course.
What happened? What did Joe Biden say?
Nando, can you set up the Joe Biden South Africa? Yes. By the way, again, just to run things down, Joe Biden's lied about being a protester during the civil rights movement. He's just lied over and over. He did it in 88 for his campaign. He's done it again this time. He obviously plagiarized a bunch of people and pawned off their work as his own. Like, he has just a history of just when he's in campaign mode, he just straight up just starts lying and making shit up. And now he's got the latest one with this alleged arrest in apartheid South Africa, Nando.
It's really shocking in many ways, but like he started telling this story of how in the late 80s he went to go see Nelson Mandela with some UN secretary, and that they both got arrested in Soweto, which is in Johannesburg, which is, you know, far away from where Nelson Mandela was in prison. And you know, it turns out that never happened. They asked the UN person and they were like, nope, that didn't happen. And there's no record of Joe Biden getting arrested. I mean, at the time he was a US senator, so you would think
freaking chance that would happen.
Yeah, of course. Like, if it did, it'd be like all over the news, you know, like there's nothing. It's just, it's something that did not happen. It's just a complete fabrication. And, you know, I don't even know at this point if Joe Biden is just like lying or he actually believes it, because he says it with such conviction and he's such an old man and he's clearly like, you know, losing his marbles, that I think maybe at this point he does believe it. But it made me think of this weird thing that's happening with the Democratic establishment, because on The View, like I want to say like a week ago, it wasn't on The View, it was on LeBron's show. Hasan Minhaj was talking about, you know, how like young people want change or whatever. And Whoopi Goldberg like clapped back at him saying like, you young people don't appreciate like what we've done in our life. Like, you know,
walked out with Ted Danson in blackface.
Exactly. You know, she was like talking about Joe Biden saying like how he helped end apartheid. And it's like, what? Like, did Joe Biden really have any meaningful thing to do with apartheid at all? Like, I highly doubt it.
Well, you know what? Actually, this is interesting, guys, because like Joe Lockhart, who was Clinton's press secretary, also put out this wild tweet complaining, like, because Bernie put out, you know, the Bernie campaign had some tweet about how we're taking on the Republican and Democratic establishments. And Joe Lockhart's like, oh, really? The Democratic establishment gave you civil rights. and everybody pointed out, like, obviously that's incredibly racist. It's ahistorical. It erases how civil rights happened. But in the same way, look, Joe Biden did so. That's actually honestly probably some of the votes he cast and things he did in the Senate in the 80s fighting apartheid, probably some of the best stuff he ever did in politics, right? But it's their mindset that they wouldn't say like, yeah, you know, this is an area where he's got an honorable record. You should give him a little, you know, some props for it. They say it was not the thousands of people in South Africa who got murdered by the security forces. It was not the ANC building this like world-class political organization while they're underground and in exile that like grips global media and produces like multiple kind of cultural political icons. That was Joe Biden. You should fucking think. Yeah. Like, that's their mindset. Like, they look back at the 60s. They don't see the hundreds of thousands of people on the streets. They don't see the murdered people in the South. They just see LBJ, that one day LBJ was just like, you know what? That's not right, man. I'm going to fucking sign that.
And by the way, LBJ definitely deserves credit for what he did, because he worked his ass off to get it done. And guess what? There might be, what, like two people in the entire Democratic Party with as much balls as that dude left? Like, if yeah, that, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's like, you can't compare a single Democrat to LBJ. Like, when you just think about Nancy Pelosi and the dragging and the, we can't impeach the criminal. And it's like, straight up, it's not even about, because to me, a lot of it is like, it's not even about what you actually, quote unquote, get done. When the Republicans are doing their whole repeal and repeat and blah, 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 like, they know they're not going to strip away the shit that their own people actually like, but it's symbolic, and it keeps stuff in the news, and it keeps them on the attack, and they don't even understand the idea of just fighting for shit. So, like,
but that's real funny too, right? Because the extent to which all of these idiots will point to examples like that. I mean, and look, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama had political skills which they used for themselves, or Bill Clinton used for reactionary politics, but that's a really good point, Waz, because when they wheel out, like, not politically or ideologically, but the times when they want to say, like, no, we had people who brawled and got stuff done, they basically are talking about, in different ways, LBJ and Bobby Kennedy and maybe JFK at times. Maybe. And what's funny is that all of those guys did exactly the opposite of what they're advocating today. Not in the sense that they didn't make compromises and cut deals, but they fucking went
sharp elbows.
They weren't just like, I'm gonna go out on TV and I'm gonna say shame on you. Like LBJ, like, you know, ironically, who's the one person in the presidential race who sounds like he's talking like LBJ? I'm gonna give big grand thematic speeches. I'm gonna be way more than him, obviously, but I'm going to be connected to the social movements. And if somebody votes against my agenda, I'm going to go to their fucking home state and embarrass them. That is more similar to what they're talking about. That's Bernie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we've said this a lot on this show. That's kind of one of the reasons why I do miss Harry Reid, because he was just like, just a ruthless bastard. But he was like literally the only Dem who was like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, all of these people, all of this hand-wringing, like, these are the biggest crybaby whiners, wimps, you know, in the world. So it's like, get out of here with all of that, man. The Democratic establishment. Like, first of all, just factually speaking, not even factually, excuse me, this isn't even subjectively speaking, the party at large, writ large, is just way different than it used to be. Right. And that's, you know, that's part of purging the Dixiecrats. That's just part of the embrace of the sort of professional class in this country and sort of leaving labor behind. And like, the party's not even the same. So when you talk about what the Democratic establishment did in 1965 compared to 2020, there's no connective tissue. There's no thread there that's connecting you guys. Like, LBJ and Bill Clinton, I mean, come on, dude. Or Hillary Clinton, like just chill, bro. This is ridiculous.
Now, Hillary Clinton would definitely be down for wiretapping MLK, though.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead, Nando.
No, I mean, it's just worth pointing out that a large chunk of the Democratic establishment, and I'm not talking about the sort of Dixiecrats, but I'm talking about, like, of the liberal intelligentsia in the 1960s, fucking hated Martin Luther King, like, absolutely hated him, you know. So let's actually,
because we got to get to this Ben Domenech thing because it's hilarious. But you know what? Let's just really quick. And Rob, I don't know whether we're going to play it now or you'll put it in post, but just this perfectly fits, because at a national, what is Al Sharpton's thing? It's NAC. It's like National Action Conference, I think. Yeah. He was doing a forum in South Carolina earlier this week, I think maybe even actually today, Wednesday as we're recording, where – and Al Sharpton is a very complicated person, which maybe, you know, we could share our thoughts on. But he didn't endorse Bernie, but he took a very significant opportunity. I have to say, this is really interesting, because Jesse Jackson published a piece a couple days ago in the Chicago Tribune – not endorsing Bernie, but heartily embracing, like explaining that democratic socialism is a positive and American thing. And Al Sharpton, as you'll hear in this clip, is saying, don't let them demonize the word socialist. And remember, that's what they called Dr. King. That's what they called, you know, the people struggling for civil rights. Of course, a lot of those folks absolutely were some form of socialist and in that broader American, you know, socialist tradition. So,
but I want to say this, and I'm going to have a lot more to say in the next day or so about this campaign, but I think it's important in South Carolina. The civil rights movement always was targeted by those that would use the Red Scare. They accused Dr. King of being a communist. Every major leader in the 60s, they tried to call socialists a communist. Whatever you decide to do on Saturday, do not go by those that use the socialist tag to try to separate us from what we need to do for this country.
So why is you guys, you know, we should hit on that too, because look, Al Sharpton deserves, I'm a points on the board person. I think he deserves a lot of points for that. Not only just because it benefits Bernie, obviously, but I think that's really important history.
No, Al Sharpton is, I feel like complicated gets used as a loaded word at times with people who have been in the public eye for, you know, 30 plus years. But Al Sharpton is definitely a complicated figure, right? Like, FBI informant, got guys locked up back when he was in his drug dealing days. Then he turned into a shakedown artist when it comes to strikes and race issues in New York. Then the man ran for president. I mean, like, this dude has lived like 70 different lives by now, right? But he still does, you know, have a constituency amongst older black voters. He still has a voice with them. He still has some credibility with them. And so you can say, you know, like a lot of times in what I do on the sports side, right, Mike, sometimes I'll see somebody retweet Skip Bayless because he happens to agree with them on one thing. And I'm just like, fucking retweet Skip. I don't care if he made your point for you. You can't do that. So I understand how some people would be like, really? We're jacking Al Sharpton now. But, you know, there's something to be said that, you know, that somebody like Al Sharpton, and like you said, Reggie Jackson coming out and being like, don't let these people try to tell you socialism is some dirty word. Because back when Jesse Jackson and his people he was hanging out around with were dying behind this shit, that's what they called us too. You know, and so, you know, I think it's important to pay attention. I think it's really interesting that Al Sharpton would choose this time particularly to sort of step up in that way.
Well, I think it's, you know, what happened with a lot of radicals and stuff that came out of the 1960s is that they kind of crashed up against the wall of capital, basically, in the sort of neoliberal reaction in the 1970s. And they were like, you know what, we might as well just give up and cash in on our cachet, you know, like, and a lot of them did that. And Al Sharpton did that. I mean, he had a show on MSNBC for a long time. You know, it's not like
he's still a contributor.
Yeah. But he had his like own show and stuff. And like, you know, that's a lot of people did that because they realized that they had all this idealism in the 1960s. They wanted to change the world. They got close. They didn't. And then there was a furious reaction in the 1970s. They're like, okay, we might as well just at least, you know, make a decent life and comfortable life for ourselves. And Bernie now kind of reinvigorating the possibility of meaningful change and of sort of destroying that whole neoliberal hegemony, I think maybe is stirring something within them that's been dormant, you know, that they see now the possibility that of fulfilling those dreams that started in the 1960s, you know, like it does feel like there is a new era dawning, or, you know, and it could, you know, it could be for the worse, like that's very obvious, but it could also be for the better. But the sort of world that we've lived in for the last 30 or 40 years is dying. And something new is going to come up from the ashes. And I think that's, you know, like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, these kind of guys are thinking like, you know what, maybe it's time to, you know, take it back up this time.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I also think like Adolph Reed, who I know I mention all the time because he should be, had some really interesting writing on sort of like different black political traditions in the 60s and how it kind of, how essentially it sort of turned like basically like the machines in major like northern cities started to have like proper black machines too, right? Like Irish and Italian machines and all of that. And you start getting, you know, really important cities run by African Americans in the 70s and 80s, like Andrew Young and Harold Washington, and they face enormous racism and resistance. And, you know, he kind of distinguishes, you know, some of them being very sincere and really wanting to deliver and working within those capitalist limits. And then, you know, others becoming just like most politicians, right? And what's interesting too, though, is that he flips it where he's kind of like, in the popular imagination, you think of like, you know, oh, like Bayard Rustin and Dr. King, like they're, and A. Philip Randolph, they're marching and they're talking about peace and lunch counters and all of that. So they're like the soft ones, and various like nationalist projects with much more, you know, like incendiary rhetoric or whatever, they're the real radicals. And his kind of argument, which is interesting, is like, actually, what King and like those guys were actually going for was they were basically, it was a two front. We're going to destroy American apartheid and then we're going to have socialism. Like the New Deal is going to become deracialized because we're going to have an actual democracy. And then we're going to have labor power and get rid of poverty and take on militarism. So actually, like, that's a very radical project. And it's interesting, you know, people like Sharpton who have played like almost every single angle of that triad kind of like come and be like, okay, well, I know that story too, because, you know, this is somebody who, again, like, you know, what we were saying was like complicated means like totally an asshole in some ways, but also like brilliant, like, and not just like brilliant in terms of, like, Trump is brilliant. Like, yes, he's brilliant at being the disgusting thing he is. Like, no, genuinely complicated, like, shakedown artist sells, like, sketchy financial products, I think, years ago. One time I saw Al Sharpton on TV when I was really young, and it was fucking amazing because they literally played a tape of him, like, talking, like, a Coke deal, like, not like, oh, like, let's, how many suitcases you got for me? But literally, like, no, I'm going to want another key on that. Like not even using code words. And they go back to him and he's just like, but you didn't play the other tape. The best bullshit I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. And like, you know, I got to be careful, but like, you know, I talked to some, not actually this person said nothing bad about them. I just want to, you know, maintain whatever, but like somebody who was, you know, knew him a little bit, they were like, you know, you got to realize like this guy is like, you know, he knows about Pakistani history. He's reading books on international, like he knows a lot. He sees a lot. And that's also true about him. And I thought, you know, particularly in that moment with Bernie, not just that, because I think we should all be cynical enough that if he just was kind of making some positive noises towards Bernie, it would be like, okay, there's probably a, you know, there's an angle to this. But really bringing that history back up in South Carolina was like, okay, you know what? There's a lot. Like, this reminds us that you're a genuine, like, you're a complicated guy. That's awesome, you know?
Yeah. Shit, man. Cause we gotta go. I think we'll just have to table the Ben Dominic.
All right, we'll do the Ben Dominic thing next week.
We had a lot of great. Hilarious.
It'll still be hilarious. There's no time expiration on that. All right, folks. We appreciate all of you. Check out everybody's social medias. They're all linked to. Check out the live show tickets. They're all linked to. Check out the Patreon and membership pages. They're all linked to. All right. Peace and love. We'll see you all next week.
Peace out.